Welcome to the Living Artist Podcast. I'm your host, Preston M. Smith. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Living Artist Podcast. I'm Preston M. Smith, at PMS Artwork Everywhere on internet land and socials. I want to thank you for landing on this podcast. Whether you're a professional artist, just getting started in the art world, a collector of art, or just consider yourself a creative person, this podcast has something for you. I like to think of it as a fun way to rant and talk to other creative people about living the life of an artist, surviving and getting ahead in the art world, and enjoying your life. But most importantly, not waiting until you're dead to make it happen. All right, let's get started. Right. We are here with Alejandro Castañón. How are you doing, man?
I'm great. Wow. Got the name right on the first try. I'm impressed.
Well, I have an Argentinian wife, so I guess that helps.
Okay. All right.
But my Spanish is not amazing. I understand a lot more than I can speak, which is probably pretty standard for a lot of Americans, right?
I would say second language speakers, but whichever one you prefer, man.
I'm going to throw all of us under the bus right now.
Yeah. I'm not getting on the. I can't get on the bus with you, man.
Yeah. For me, that's probably safe. I probably shouldn't have either. Just let the bus go by. But so you're in, what is it, San Angelo?
Yeah, San Angelo, Texas. Yep.
Okay, awesome. I've never heard of it before, except from following you and stalking you on Instagram. So
neither did I until I had to move here.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Nice. Well, we're going to get into all that. But just for my reference, where is that?
It's in West Texas. So very flat land. Just imagine El Paso being on the far left-hand side of the map. Okay. And San Antonio in the middle. Mm-hmm. We're about a third of the way from San Antonio to El Paso.
Oh, okay. Okay, great. Yeah. Where are you in relation to Austin?
West.
Okay, perfect. Gotcha. Yeah. I still don't know 100%, but I'm getting closer now. Yeah.
In fact, so, I'll be there later tonight in Austin.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Are you doing that for art? I know that's a big art community over there.
No, actually I do this trip about once or twice a month to go see my son. They don't have a whole lot going on right now. I think all their shows have gone virtual, which is, I'm like, yeah, that's what I thought was going to happen for sure.
Yeah. Like everybody else. Sometimes I forget when I'm talking about other places, it's like, oh yeah, the pandemic is happening everywhere.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Well, that's actually how we connected originally. Was I was just kind of watching the podcast. I think it was five or six episodes in, and you reached out. You do a lot of, we'll get into that, but you do a lot of business coaching, right? And, we were talking about COVID and just basically how to kind of help artists transition to online, which is what I'm a big proponent of. So you actually recorded an intro to, one of my episodes, which was,
that's right.
I think it was favorite online art marketplaces. And that was great. So I always had you on the back burner. I'm like, we will do a full episode with Alejandro soon.
Wow. So thank you for remembering me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, of course, man. No, thanks for doing that. And it's good to kind of finally come full circle. So let's start off with the virus, which will not be named. How have you been doing? I know you did the intro for COVID a long time ago, but has anything changed? Have you been adapting? How's your art been adapting?
Yeah. I would say that it's adapted slightly. And I say that because I was already doing a lot of online stuff before all this happened.
Right.
And so I adapted slightly to it. There is a lot less in-person sales, which, sometimes I'll have a painting in a venue in town or in another city and somebody would purchase it from there. That was like a regular thing for me. And I did not see that pretty much the entire time we've been since March.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I would say that's the biggest thing that I've seen so far, but everything else has been going really good.
Well, I think that's the thing too that we were talking about is those artists who had already kind of established an online presence had a much easier time transitioning, and then everybody else was kind of scrambling to catch up or just didn't or have been suffering because they haven't really had the wherewithal to do it. Mm-hmm. I know some people who really don't have computer skills have been kind of left in the dark, which sucks. Mm-hmm. But
Thank you for doing what you're doing and for trying to help people make that transition. So San Angelo, does it have a good art scene?
You know what? It's funny you say that. It's been growing significantly year over year since probably 2010. Mm-hmm. Really exploded the last 2 years. And I'd been here as an artist and art gallery owner for about 9 years. And so I just was able to see a lot of that transitioning happening. And so, yes, to answer your question, there is now.
Oh, nice.
There is now. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, it's kind of underground. I wouldn't call underground in the sense of like New York City underground, but very mm-hmm. much in the sense like it's hard to find.
Oh, okay.
And so, yeah.
Well, that's kind of cool though. You know, mm-hmm. you're one of the cool kids, the underground kids in LA. In LA, it's just like, everybody's an artist. Get in line, take a number.
I can imagine. When I went down there, I visited LA a few times and I kind of got the sense of that it was just a very artsy, artistic town. It's just everything's art related in a sense.
Yes. And thank you for calling it a town, by the way, because I say that and people always get mad at me. It's a city. It's like, come on. That's what we just do. I'm from Wyoming. So we call everything towns.
I think that's just a small town thing. Like you just get used to calling cities towns. That's what I'm used to.
Yeah. I like it. It's charming.
It is.
A 20 million, you know, people deep town. But it's also LA is just not only just art. It's just kind of a city of people trying to be seen. You know what I mean? Whether it's entertainment industry or the art industry or the modeling industry or who knows, even the porn industry. Everybody's trying to get their time in the spotlight. So it has its pros and its cons. It's kind of like you're swimming in the big pond, but it's also very easy to drown. So how has that been for you to kind of, you know, climb up the ladder there and establish your presence?
You know, when I first started out as an artist, I'd already had a career in the military. And so I was really just coming at this from like a, I don't know what I'm doing angle. Mm-hmm. And so I researched a lot of information online and just tried to learn as much as I could. And a lot of the answers I found didn't apply to me because it was for the assumption that if you're an artist, you're living in a city more than a million people.
Right.
And so I was like, that principle doesn't apply to me because I live in a town of less than 100,000.
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, it was just like, okay, well, how can I adapt to this? So there was a lot of that when I first started here, but what I found was it was more of an advantage being in a small town.
Yeah.
Because it was more like, you know, not that I don't think competition is a bad thing. I just think that if people are all hustling together to, you know, to get after it, I think everybody wins. But
exactly.
At the same time, you're kind of like a big fish in a small pond sort of thing. There's only just so many fish in there and everybody is fishing. And so you can be found easily. So that's what was an advantage here.
That is very true. And I think that's kind of why in certain places like LA, for example, we kind of break it down into little segments. Like I have a big art community that I follow with the gallery I'm with in Hermosa Beach, which is kind of like, it has its own little microcosm there. And it's nice. You kind of establish a feeling of community. But yeah, if you try to just be an LA artist, just that, you can kind of get lost. So this was, you said, 9 years ago or 11 years ago? How many years?
Yeah, I got here in 2011 and I opened the gallery that same year at the end of the year. So it's been 9 years now.
Okay. So
Sorry.
So was it easier, you think, with, you know, what you could do online? I know a lot of the art marketplaces weren't starting to boom at that point, but there was an ability to sell online.
Absolutely. It was Facebook.
Right.
100% Facebook was like my biggest driver of sales back in those days when I was online, you know, so I would definitely attribute it to social media for sure. And like you said, there wasn't, I mean, I think Etsy was just very new at the time. And so there wasn't a whole lot of e-commerce opportunities like there are now. Oh my goodness.
Right. I think eBay was kind of one of the big hubs at that time.
Yeah. And then I think Society 6 was the only like third party printer that was doing anything for artists at the time, besides maybe Fine Art America, maybe, I think.
Definitely. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I got on with Society 6. I met some guys at a bar one time. They're like, oh yeah, you should try this Society 6 thing. And I was like, oh, this is going to change everything. And then I basically sold like a print here and there.
Like once in a while, I'll get like a deposit to my PayPal. I'm like, what is this for?
Where is this coming from? Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, what is this? And I go to there and I'm like, oh, I sold something. That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of shows more than anything the importance of diversifying, right? If you're putting all your eggs in one basket.
Right.
Because for me, I was like, oh, all I need to do is if I just sold like 20 prints a week or something, and then it was like, I would be lucky to sell 20 prints in a year. You know what I mean?
I've done that before.
That's hilarious. Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, before we get too far, I always do origin stories here because I think of artists kind of like superheroes. So I know you've touched on a couple things, but you've got an interesting life and origin story. So you want to take us through, start whenever you want. You can start as young as you want and then up to how you got into the art world.
Let's start at 7 months old.
Nice.
I'm just kidding.
My first memory.
I'll keep it short. So just a quick background. My dad was military, but mm-hmm. We were all born in Mexico. So he actually immigrated to the United States. My dad's family is all migrant workers from Mexico. And they're living in Florida. So, you know, he joined the military, and then shortly after I was born, and we pretty much went straight overseas after that.
So how old were you when that happened?
I was in Mexico till I was 3, and then I was in Florida till I was 6, so I was about 6 and a half when we moved to Spain.
Okay. Keep going. I just wanted to get a mental picture.
And then after that, we moved to Germany, and that's where I finished high school.
Oh,
it was crazy. I was like, I had completely separated from my culture. I didn't have any exposure to art except for what the European culture has to offer, which is beautiful architecture and cathedrals and museums.
Definitely.
But I wasn't practicing. I was just, you know, I was exposed to it basically.
But and getting that kind of cultural, all those different cultures and experience, I'm assuming you speak German as well?
I speak a little bit of German, not as much as I used to because it's been a long time since I've lived over there. But I'm fluent in Spanish,
right?
And I know a little bit of Italian, but not a whole lot.
Nice. Now, do you speak? I'm interested because my wife and I always talk about languages. Did you get a little bit of your Spanish from Spain, or was it primarily from Mexico?
I did, and I didn't know what Spanish I was speaking until I was here, and then people were like, "What? Like, where are you from?" And I'm like, I'm Mexican. They're like, no, you're not.
You're saying gracias.
Yeah. Yes. And they're so, and the pacing it sounds different. You could just, whenever you, now that I've been exposed to different types of Spanish, I can tell the difference when somebody's from Mexico and when somebody's from like Argentina
or
from Spain. You can just, it's nuanced if you have the ear for it, but.
It definitely is. For people who aren't used to Spanish at all, they can just lump it together. But yeah, I've gotten so much better at it now too. I love in Argentina, they all do the yo, you know, like it's a pollo, not pollo, pollo. And it's interesting. Yeah. And then Spain is pretty obvious as well. But then getting through Central America on up to Mexico, hearing some of those nuances and some of them share, like I think it's Salvador also does the yo. Like Argentinians, I believe. I could be wrong. I'm going to get hate mail from Salvador, but yeah, it's fascinating to me. Anyway, sorry. Go ahead. You're in Germany.
Yeah, we moved to Germany, and I just spent the rest of the time there till I graduated high school, and that's when I decided I wanted to join the military, like my dad did, and he retired 20 years. So my goal was to retire 20 years in the military too. You know, I wanted to retire at 39 is when I joined the military. Or 19, I was joining the military. I was going to retire at 39, so 20 years.
I was like, damn, you look really good for being
60. 69. I did the math wrong. That was my plan. And I was doing that. I was a combat engineer in the Air Force. And so I did a couple tours. I did Iraq. And I did some tours in South America too. And then the next 4 years I was a recruiter.
Whereabouts in South America? Sorry.
Oh gosh, we went to Colombia for a humanitarian mission. So we partnered with the military there just to help rebuild some stuff that was, you know, torn apart by natural disasters and stuff like that. So, also got deployed down to Katrina in Louisiana when Katrina hit. So we did the cleanup there. So it was, stuff like that when I was in. And then after that, I became an Air Force recruiter, which was like doing a 180 complete turnaround of what I was doing before then. And this is how it set up my experience for marketing, sales.
That was one of my next questions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what that set that. It kind of sparked the entrepreneurial energy. I still didn't know that I wanted to own a business, but I know that I had a lot of fun with sales and marketing. I just loved doing it. That's where I found that out.
Nice.
And then I was going to stay longer in the military, but they were going to send me to Korea, and I didn't want to go because my daughter lives here in San Angelo. Mm-hmm. So they were going to send me for a year without any vacation. So I said, no, I don't want to be alone. Gone that long from her. So I was like, I'm just going to get out. So I did. I left the military.
So you, so how many years were you in the military?
Eight years.
Eight. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah. So you're late 20s when you came back here.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I was in my late 20s. Yeah. And then I came here with no plan, literally no plan.
Nice.
No prospects, no nothing. I ended up getting a marketing job for a dentist office. And then I got a small little place, and my workload as a recruiter was just so heavy. I was doing 12-hour days in the office for 4 years. That when I got here, the job I had was salary based, and I got most of my work done in 3 hours. So I was literally going stir crazy.
I'm sure it wasn't quite as challenging either, right?
No, not at all. That's what bored me to death, that it wasn't challenging. That I didn't have to figure it out because it was so easy.
Yes.
And so that's when I was like, maybe I want to start a business. And I was like, what do I want to start? And, I had come across this, the paint and sip classes in Houston when I was in the military. Have you been to one of those?
No, I know about them.
Okay. So I went to one. This was when I was in the military still. And I had a great time. Took my girlfriend back then. We had a great time. And so that always just kind of was stuck in my head for some reason. I didn't realize that this city I was in San Angelo didn't offer that. I was like, it was such a huge deal in Houston. And so I thought maybe I could do it. And
you mean like maybe you could run a paint and sip type thing?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Maybe I could run it. But I didn't have any art experience. I didn't know how to draw or paint or anything like that. And so I hired an instructor, and I got all the supplies, and we rented out a space. And held our first class, and it was small. But from there, we decided to get into an actual permanent location, and we opened later that year, 2011. And then during that time period, it's so serendipitous how this my art career ended up coming about. During the classes, I would assist the instructor.
Okay.
I'd pass out paint. I'd help clean up as that's because that's all I could do. I didn't know how to paint or do any of that stuff.
Right.
And so, I would get bored sometimes because I didn't have to do that whole lot. So I'd be sitting around and I'd start sketching. And the lady that taught.
Like free classes said, here.
Yeah. I was like, well, I was listening and I was just kind of doodling, and she was looking at my drawings. She said, you've got a very good eye for portraiture. You should try painting. Mm-hmm. And I was like, nah, I've never done that before. I was like, I don't know if I'd be any good. She was like, well, we got the supplies. What are what does it matter?
Right.
I'm not going to be out any money, really. So I said, okay. So I tried it out, and it was terrible. I was really bad. Really, really, really bad.
I thought you were going to be like, so I tried it out, and my first one was a masterpiece.
No, dude, it was terrible. It was so bad. I painted over it like 5 times till I was happy with it. I think what got me hooked was I had never spent that much time in one sitting being creative,
right?
Ever in my life up until that point.
It's different, right?
It's a completely different experience. It's like my brain was like, "What was that?"
Oh, like, yeah! It just opens up. Expands.
It just opens up. Absolutely. So. Yeah. I was like, man, I want to do that again. Like, I don't care what I paint. I just want to do that. And
into that kind of flow state, right?
Absolutely. Like, yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Which I have a lot of discoveries about that whole process. But moving forward, I just ended up continuing to paint. And I remember we had an art walk one night, and we had, because our space doubled as a gallery. So I was showing local artists there. And I was like, Vino di Pinte? Yeah, okay. That's right. You could hear my European influences coming out.
Right.
It bit me in the ass.
That's not Spanish.
I was like, why would I name it something nobody could pronounce? So
intrigue.
I guess that was it, man. I wish I would have done a better job for Google search, because Google was like, I don't know what you're trying to do here.
Oh my God, that's great.
So anyway, we had the art walk, and I hung up my artwork just to show it. You know, my instructor was like, you should do it, put it up. I was like, okay. So this guy came through, was looking at, like, I had six pieces up. He was like, how much for those five? And I was I don't know. What do you think? And he was like, I'll give you 600 for all five. And I was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, let's do that.
Sure.
And I was like, I mean, those canvases cost me like $40. Like, exactly. That's great.
Low overhead.
And so I was like, well, yeah, that's great. So I sold those and I got the taste for like the business side, which kind of invigorated my experience as a recruiter and as a business owner. So I saw the potential to do something with it, but I still was lacking a lot of, I think, fundamental lessons in actually creating a career in art. And I still didn't have that under my belt, but I knew I really wanted to do it because it was enjoyable. It made me happy. I felt like I could get better. And so all the signals were there, like, you know, the profit margin was there, the creative outlet was there. I think I went through just a kind of like maybe a mental shift after I started painting, to where it was more of like a passion that I didn't know I had. Like, you know, everybody is looking for purpose in their life.
Of course.
You know, it's very hard to find it. I'll be very honest with you. It's very difficult to find purpose, and that is what I found. That's what I found. I found that purpose. That was really...
Well, I think that's key, man. And it's almost like, it sounds like you passed the point of no return, right? Once you've accessed that side of yourself, it's kind of hard to just go, okay, now I'm going to go back to the normal job and just shut that part down that I now know exists, right?
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome. That was me too. I mean, I always knew I wanted to be an artist, artist and actor. But I came down here to do it, and you know, I struggled. I hit my head up against the wall for a decade plus. And I mean, even though I had like small wins here and there, but overall it was like I was not a monetary success, right? And it was one of those things where I started to go, well, maybe I should try to do this fallback thing. So I would kind of search around, but everything I tried, I was just like, no, I'd probably end up killing myself, because it would be giving up what I know now that I can do and that I have access to. It was a kind of a death. I don't know if it was that strong for you, but that's how it felt to me.
It was a huge, the shift came for me when I left the military. That was the shift. Because everything had been planned out since then. I was so sure I was going to be a career Air Force retiree like my father. I was like, that's what I thought. That was me. I thought that was me. And when I came here and then I fell in love with art, it just like I became a different person, totally different person.
That's so interesting. It's crazy what we get attached to. It's like, this becomes our ego identity. You know, I am this. Yeah. And then you find out, oh, wait a minute. I'm not just this. I'm more than this now. That's really cool. I love hearing that, because a lot of other artists just kind of have the different experience that come up, you know, in art school or whatever. And they go, oh, yeah, this is what I'm doing. But I love that you made that transition. Now with the gallery, did you, first of all, sorry, I want to make sure you're done with the origin story. Okay.
Yes.
With the gallery, did you branch out into doing conventional shows, like group shows, solo shows, or did you kind of keep it with these classes?
No, we definitely branched out a lot. We did big shows.
Oh, nice.
And we were known for pushing the envelope. This is a very largely Republican conservative town. Especially in the rural area. You're talking about rural area?
Oh yeah, red? yeah definitely
red. No, yeah, so that's what we were dealing with, and I was like, but I'm from Europe.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that just, the mentality isn't like equal out in my head for me. So you know, I talked to my instructor, who was she ended up being my creative director, and I was like, I want to put on a show. She was like, let's do it. I was like, how do you feel about a nude show? And she was like, that could be interesting.
Right.
And I was like, let's do it. So I put in the work and marketed it, and we sold, was it tickets? Mm-hmm. No, we didn't sell tickets for it. But we said it was only 18 and up. And so we checked IDs, And so when people came in, it was very classy, local, nude artwork, mm-hmm. paintings, photography, drawings.
Yeah, I'm assuming it wasn't like erotica.
No, I wouldn't push it that hard.
Right.
Not that hard over here. But what they didn't know is that we had two nude models in the back that we painted, one male, one female. And that was what sparked the whole thing. We did that show consecutively for 6 years because it was so popular.
Wow.
And then we did other small shows. We did solo shows. We did, lots of different variety. In fact, we brought down some Hollywood actors from a movie called Blood In, Blood Out. It's kind of a very Mexican Chicano, cult movie. Yeah. It's got Benjamin Bratt in it.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a big movie in Hispanic culture.
Isn't there a little bit of a gang theme in that?
There is. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah. I want to make sure.
So, we brought the actor down, that played the drug addict, and we brought the artist that did the artwork in the movie. And so,
We did
a show featuring them, and man, it was crazy. It was absolutely nuts. How much people loved those guys. They just loved it.
Well, and talk about I'm sure it was a bit of both, but also what a great marketing strategy too.
Oh man. Well, yeah, we just had fun with it. I mean, we sold tickets for that.
Yeah.
And we sold out in an hour.
Wow.
For that event.
Oh, that's crazy. So cool. I haven't seen any pictures of those. Do you have any on your website?
No, because after I got rid of the gallery, it was all associated with the gallery. So that was, I have images on my hard drive from it.
Okay.
And I think I put some up on Instagram on my own profile a while back.
Mm-hmm.
After I let go of the gallery, a lot of those photos went with on their social media. So
gotcha.
I still stay in touch with those guys. They were really, they're very nice guys.
So the gallery is still there?
I sold the gallery to an employee. Mm-hmm. And she turned it into basically the same concept, and showing her own artwork. So she's done a great job with it. Very proud of her.
Nice. Cool. Yeah. So just to continue off of that, what made you want to sell?
To sell the gallery?
Yeah. To sell the gallery and to move on.
I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I just didn't like managing, the gallery anymore. I was mm-hmm. I felt like I was neglecting my art career.
Yeah.
And, I thought after, at this point, I had already been, I finished my marketing degree. I already had started as a business advisor at this job full time. And so at that point, I was just like, this is a waste of money. If I'm not trying hard to make revenue at this gallery, then I need to let it go.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. I was like, it's just time to go. And so I just put all that energy into my own art career, and it's been taking off a lot more since then. But yeah, it was just time to go. You know, it's everything's got kind of a shelf life, if you will, with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like you made the right choice too. I mean, it can be a little stifling because that, I know that takes up a lot of time running a gallery, and a lot of energy, but your website is great. It's funny because like I look at your stuff and your online presence, your Instagram, and I kind of see a like-minded person. You've got a lot of stuff going on. You know what I mean? And I'm the same way. It's like, I feel like I barely have time to breathe sometimes. And then I looked at your website and I'm like, oh my God, I think he might even have more stuff going on than I do.
probably true.
So, tip of the cap to you on that. But, I love your website. I wanted to ask you, it seems like you have a lot of prints that you are kind of pushing on your website. Would you say that you sell primarily prints or a combination of originals and prints, or are you trying to push prints more than originals?
I mean, right now I'd say I sell by quantity, more prints than I do originals. Mm-hmm. But I would say in terms of just like total money, they're about equal. But yes, I am trying to push more prints than originals, just because it relieves the pressure of having to sell originals, to where I can feel like I'm creating from a more, genuine place and not influenced by, oh, I gotta sell this to hit this goal at the end of this month. And we've all been there, I think. We've made deals with the devil with painting, pet portraits that I think you're like, okay, I don't feel like this is where I want to do with my art career.
Oh yeah. So, I remember way back in the day, I painted a pet portrait and I was like, all right, that's it. I'm not doing that anymore.
I know what you mean. And but you know, I think in that same token, I just wanted to make sure that I was doing what I needed to do to set myself up in the future. Like I wanted to be more compassionate to myself in the future.
Yeah.
And so that's why I wanted to push Prince harder. And I still am. Absolutely. Every day I'm pushing Prince.
Now, do you have like a fulfillment partner with your printing, or do you handle that all yourself?
It's both. I have one where I do it myself here. Those are the poster prints, and smaller prints than that I do here.
Yeah.
But for like my canvas prints, I use CG Pro prints. Mm-hmm. I use them, but I love them. I've been with them since I first started.
Nice. I do Bay Photo.
You do Bay Photo. Okay. Very similar. But high quality prints. Yeah. For those, for the canvas prints. And then I use Printful to do like stickers, you know, postcards, that type of stuff, t-shirts.
Yeah. The reason why I ask about the fulfillment partner, for anybody who's listening, who's like trying to up their game or trying to sell more art, having a fulfillment partner is kind of nice because it kind of gives you like passive income. You can have people buying art on your website and then you just sit back and let them handle it, which is nice. Because that's what we all want. We want to be able to focus on creating our originals, doing some other stuff, marketing, Instagram, you know, so on and so forth. And that gives you the ability to do that. But I also saw on your website, you were doing a video of, I forget what you called it, but basically where you're personalizing prints. Cause that's a thing that's been happening recently. And I think that's really cool. So you're actually getting a print and then you're painting on top of that to personalize it, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'll embellish it. Those are for the canvas prints, just because it allows me to add more value in there and ask for more, since it's already a high quality print as it is, but
right,
adding that extra flair to it, I can justify the price even more, that price point, because they're expensive.
Yeah. Because you're making it a one of a kind.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, how much do you do on that? Do you do like just little enhancements, or do you like how much time do you devote to doing that kind of stuff?
Yeah, just enhancements. I want to make sure one part of the painting stands out more than the rest, because that was my intention. And I'll do stuff like that. I might do some thick lines just to add texture. You know, I might add some oil pastels to it. Just, you know, whatever I feel like is going to help make that piece look even more unique without changing it. You know what I mean?
And what, like, just ballpark, let's say you've got I'm just going to throw out a size. Let's say you got a 24 by 36 canvas print that you've enhanced. What do you sell those for typically?
Probably 500, 550 for 24 by 36. Yeah.
And then are you doing, what kind of markup are you? I mean, you don't have to tell me all this if you don't, but what kind of markup are you doing on your prints typically?
Man, I would say I don't do the percentages, but I could tell you what I pay wholesale, because that's not a secret. I mean, go on the website for CG Pro Prints.
Yeah,
I think for the 24, for 24 by 36, I think it's $65. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, $550, you know, plus shipping.
Plus shipping. You know,
I think I'm making $400 on the deal.
Right. And then you're also doing your personalized touches too. It's a good deal for both. Like, you're making a good markup, but people are actually getting a very unique piece. So it makes sense on both ends.
What I've learned is that if it feels like it's good quality and it's high quality and it looks like it's high quality, then you need to charge a high quality price, because if you don't, then you're not going to be creating any sort of sense of demand from your clients and customers.
Exactly.
It's a very emotional, psychological thing. Like, when I get something that was expensive, I expect it to feel expensive.
Yes.
And if it feels cheap, I'll know I'm cheated. So
definitely.
So I think it's the same thing with when you're doing reproductions. My poster prints, when you get it in the mail, it doesn't feel cheap, but it doesn't feel like it's an expensive print. It just feels like it's a poster print, which is what it is. And so, you know, I asked $20 for a 12 by 18. And I think people are willing to pay that amount, because that's what it feels like.
Yeah.
And if I increase the value of the paper and the quality of the print itself, then I can ask for more. But, you know, I think that's a really good entry level price for people that are getting familiar with my work.
It's a great entry level price. And I think I've spoken with other artists on this too. And with people like that, who aren't really sure, they're kind of dipping their toes in the water. They want to see how they like the experience, if they're happy. And then a lot of times they'll come back and, you know, buy more. They'll buy a bigger print, or they'll even buy an original. So I'm always telling people to kind of focus on the long game and not just the short sale. Like, I'm gonna get the most I can out of this print. And then they're going to go like, wow, this wasn't really worth this. Fuck you. I'm not going to buy anything from you again.
Exactly.
You want people to feel the value, just like you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. That's a good mindset to have. And then while we're on your website, I wanted to ask you about a couple things. So yeah, originals, you get the blog, you got the podcast. I saw that you have a young artist scholarship. What's that all about? Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to do something to give back to the community. That's kind of the other stuff that I do aside from my own projects. I like for my own art career, I try to do other stuff that's like kind of associated with it, but I don't sell anything out of it. And so that was one that I really wanted to do. And I was like, man, how can I help out? And I really want to help out these younger artists that I feel like, you know, if they could learn what I learned earlier than when I learned it, they would be in a better position. And so that was kind of the young scholarship was just to kind of get them started. Like, you know, we would pick one young artist submitted by anybody in the community. And I just picked one that I think that was deserving, that was really saw like they were motivated and they really loved art. And I bought easel, many canvases, paint, brushes, markers, anything that would basically allow them to express themselves artistically. So that's awesome. They got the whole setup, basically a whole small studio for a kid. And so that's what that scholarship is to get them going.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. And I think you probably understand the value of that too, because listening to your origin story, it's one of those things where like, if maybe you hadn't had some of that stuff kind of pushed on you, you might not have ever done it, right?
Yeah.
So getting these kids, you know, getting them to have this experience that they might not have otherwise, it's turning a lot more people into art. That's great.
I think so. I think that's the kind of, and I think the other reason was, and I'm not trying to put out our city here. It's a great city. It's just that their art program is non-existent in the schools.
Well, and that's not just your city. That's a lot of places, right?
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, that's the only city I've lived.
right.
Besides when I was in the military. So I didn't know what the standard was, but to me, I was just like, that's not enough. So, you know, I thought, well, what if I wish I could give a scholarship to all the kids, but you know, maybe just picking the ones that I know really want it and give it to them. Sure. Maybe.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, and it also sparks other kids see that and then they're going to, oh, maybe I could do this too.
Yeah,
that's awesome that you're doing that, man. That's really cool. Well, we're at the midway part. So if you don't mind taking a little pause and then do you have time to do a second round?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Let me just stop this. All right. We're back after a mini potty break.
And our sponsors advertisement.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So speaking of which, how's your podcast doing? It seems like you maybe release kind of an episode every month or so. Is that right?
More like whenever I think I have an interesting thought. It's not organized. It's not organized at all.
Okay.
But I was really just wanting another medium to express and explore. So, but it's got more purpose now because I just started a website for our community called Art Alliance San Angelo. It just seemed to be a perfect fit for a channel.
Because you weren't doing anything else, you know?
Because I wasn't doing anything else, man. I just didn't think that I had enough on my plate.
Right. And so, sorry, what's it called again?
Art Alliance San Angelo.
Okay. What's that all about? If you don't mind
we were talking earlier at the phone call, like there's a lot of talent here, but they just don't know. It's hard to find them. So what I do is I use the website as a hub for all visual art related information in our city.
Oh, cool.
So I have all the art venues, the art galleries, their information, their links, a map where you can find them, and then an updated event schedule for all the visual art events that are going on in our city. There's a place for artists that don't have physical locations to be listed on the website so that people can find them. People lurking for art in San Angelo, all they got to do is go to this website and they'll be able to hopefully find everything.
So for example, somebody could find somebody's studio if they wanted to do a studio visit, they could access that.
Oh, easily. Absolutely. They can do that right now for sure.
Oh, that's awesome.
But if let's say that they were looking for maybe a ceramic artist, they would be able to go on the website and find, even if that person doesn't have a studio, they could go in and find, oh, this is a ceramic artist, but they only exist on Instagram. Let me go to that link. And then they'll click through and then they'll go to that artist's link on Instagram to see all their work, because most artists don't have websites. So, especially in rural areas, that's even more prevalent. So that's why I created the website, because just because I know how to exist online doesn't mean all the other artists do.
Right.
And that doesn't seem fair in a community this small, because we will do much better if everybody's doing really well. So that's the premise of the website, is to gather all this information. And there may be only 200, maybe 250 artists here in town, but all of that information on one website will pull a lot of Google listings and make us the first one to be searched. So
that's why I did it,
because there's just a huge vacuum, all these artists and no way to find them. So that's why it needed to exist.
Putting San Angelo on the map.
Trying to, man. There's so many. James Gill lives here. James Gill was one of the original pop artists with Andy Warhol.
Oh yeah. And,
he lives here, man. I've spoken to him. I saw
that's so cool.
And I fanboyed out on him. I was like, oh my God, dude, like I love you. And he's just like, what? He's like 90. He's like, what?
Right. He's like, where am I?
So I mean, it's like artists like that people don't know that live in this town, and they're here. They're working.
That guy's still working. Did he retire there, or
no? Dude, he's still working here. Like, he's still creating art.
Oh wow.
He goes to Germany and does shows over there, because that's where a lot of his prints sell. But man, the dude's still working.
That's so cool, man. Yeah. You know, and that's everywhere. That's why it's good that you're doing that, because people just don't even realize there are artists all over the place, and you'd be surprised where some of them kind of move out to when they're done with city life, or if they've never done the city life thing. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe even a potential, you know, mentorship opportunity for people, you know, depending on how busy they are.
Absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of great stuff for the art community. You kind of have a similar sensibility to me. Like, I feel, you know, at the beginning when I first started out, it was just like, I'm competing against everybody. Like, I can't do this. Can't, you know, let them know any of my secrets, or this person, if they get this, it's taking a job for me. But really, when everything opened up for me was when I kind of flipped the script and was like, no, there's a lot of opportunities out there for everybody. When I succeed, you succeed, and vice versa. And you just start to find countless opportunities when you have that mindset shift. Sorry, I'm having a hard time speaking.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's great, man. That's awesome that you're doing that. Well, I wanted to finish a couple quick things on the website, because your website is deep. And by the way, all those San Angelinos out there, you have no excuse now to not be an artist. He's done all the work for you. Just do it. So do you call them San Angelinos?
I was going to say San Angeloans.
Oh, okay. I took it from Los Angeles. But anyway, San Angeloans.
Yeah.
Okay. So all you San Angeloans out there, you've got no excuse. So what's this brand ambassador thing you have on your website too?
So let me just say before that, I have a lot of marketing ideas. And
you and me both, we should just sit down.
Dude, I'm telling you, we would probably get so much value from each other, just not just on the stuff that you tried and failed at,
yeah,
but tried and succeeded, that might be stuff that I've never thought of, and vice versa.
Right, so, or it sparks something else from the other person, you know.
It does. That's usually what it does for me, because what I'll end up doing is I'll be like, huh, I was like, well, maybe I could try this and see what happens. And, you know, I'd say like 6 times out of 10 it fails. And I have to try it, because it'll just eat away at me. I'm like,
but that means 40% of the time it doesn't, though. You know,
that's right. 40% of the time it works. And even if it doesn't work, I learned something from it.
Exactly. Yep.
And so it's just one of those things where I like trying new things. So that's whenever the ambassador program came up, I was like, you know, I got to figure out a way to do something better and more valuable with my existing collectors. I think what ends up happening is that we get so focused on new sales, we think that we're only getting new collectors. And although that's a percentage, it can't be our focus.
Exactly.
At least not entirely. So I was just thinking to myself, I was like, I got to figure out a way to touch, get in touch with them more consistently and continue to build value with them. And so that's when I thought of that program. And it's just like a loyalty program, but for art collectors. More specifically, my art collectors, because it's unique to what I know their needs are.
Right.
And so, you know, that's why I created it. Because I thought, you know, well, if it doesn't work, I haven't lost any money. So
that's so true. And actually, you're absolutely right. I think that's another thing that goes along with the long game. When you're focused on just making a quick one-off sale, you're really kind of shooting yourself in the foot. I can't remember who said it, but if you have like 100 really supportive collectors in your career, I know it takes some time to build that, but once you get to that point, I mean, that can sustain you for life. Because
it really can.
Yeah, because they come back and you know, okay, it's been 3 years. I'm going to come back and buy another piece. I've had people buy 9 paintings at once and then come back. And you think like, oh, they're tapped out. There's no way this person's ever going to want another painting, right? They come back and buy another couple in a few years. And it's mind-boggling, but I think that's great. You got to take care of your people. You got to take care of your customers, really, your collectors.
It's so much harder to acquire a new customer than it is to keep the existing one.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
So that's why a lot of that focus has to go towards them and making sure there's a plan to figure out how you're going to talk to them on a consistent basis.
So. Right. And you know, developing a rapport with them. I mean, I think a lot of collectors also, they don't want to just have your art. They want to like, they want to know you. They want to know what you're all about.
They want to be in your life. Absolutely. I would say the majority of my collectors, I have their cell phone number.
Oh, that's cool, man.
And text. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think the only, I have a lot too, but I think the only, difference with me is, and I wanted to ask you this too, might be a good segue, but being on a lot of different art marketplaces where you kind of don't have that ability to give your cell phone, or it's kind of frowned upon to like give your personal information out to a collector. Mm-hmm. That would be like the one, some of them still find me and connect, which is great. And then, you know, we just continue that relationship, but keep in contact with your collectors. That's the best thing you can do. And don't just focus on the quick sale, because that's not sustainable in the long run.
No. You know, sometimes what I do with my collectors is I'll be looking at art on Pinterest, or I see something on Instagram and I'll snapshot it and it's not mine. I'll send them a picture and be like, hey, what do you think of this? I know you like rock music. They're like, oh man, where did you find that? I'm like, I found it on Pinterest. Here's a link to the artist's website.
Oh, wow.
And so I do that for one specific reason. I want them to know that I think that the way they collect art is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me value them rather than valuing me. And it's just one way relationship. Cause that's what usually is for businesses, isn't it? When you go to a place, it's always like, you know, one way relationship. But I kind of want that. Yeah. I want the kind of emotional experience to be like, oh man, they value me. And that's the hard part when you're an artist, because I think like big box stores figure it out, like Target, they show their customers how they value them. But I think like on our level, it's more like, well, if I can spend a little extra time with this one collector, you know, doing something that'll show them I'm considering them and valuing their own opinions, then it just creates a better connection. And then they want to like give you more business, whether it's from them or a friend or a family member. And
Definitely.
That's usually what's been the case for me, where I don't think I've had a month where I didn't have at least 2 or 3 commissions in the last 7 years.
Oh, wow. That's awesome. Well, yeah. And also just giving, kind of being customer service oriented. Like I have a person who just bought a triptych in Spain, kind of a big triptych, and I sent it over to them. And it's just, I don't know if it's the pandemic or the customs there, but it's been stuck in customs for almost 2 weeks now. And, you know, he's waiting and he's being patient. It's great, but he had to send a lot of documents and they charge a very large VAT. Mm-hmm. So he had to shell out another 330 euros. And I was like, man, you know what? I just said, hey, let me split that with you. So I just like refunded him half of that VAT charge. And I've been constantly in communication with him over the last 2 weeks. And, you know, you can tell he appreciates it. And that's another version of, that's not just doing it to like try to sell more. Like, I just think that's a good way to be with people in general, but also it does develop kind of a rapport, and you will maybe have this person, oh, you know, that artist was really cool. Maybe I should look more at more of their work.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree.
Okay, cool. Let's shift off your website for a moment. Are you on any other online art marketplaces?
Etsy. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. So this is just, I'll briefly state this. I have 5 Instagram accounts, and no, they're not throwaway accounts. And I have two Etsy stores. They're not bots. They're two. And then I have 2 Etsy stores because my theory is, and I will listen to your last podcast, by the way, yesterday, about an artist having their style, but wanting to explore other things.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
So I listened to that yesterday and I was like, yeah, that kind of feels like me, because I've got so many interests, movies, music, comedians, rock music, rap. I mean, I've got so much that I remember when I was a kid thinking if I could draw that, I would be so happy.
Yeah.
And so now I'm just like exploring all of that. But what I learned was when I put all of that under one like account, the algorithm didn't know what to do with it. And so I was like, well, why don't I just separate them into their own lines of product lines, like a department store would do. Mm-hmm. So that way I can make sure that the algorithm is showing this to the right people. And so that's what I did. I created 4 other Instagram accounts and I had 2 Etsy stores. My Etsy store that I used to have had everything on it and I was doing terrible sales. I had like 300 products on there, but they were all so different.
Yeah.
And so the algorithm on Etsy didn't know who I was trying to sell to. So at the beginning of this year, before COVID hit, I got rid of everything except for Chicano art. And so it's just Mexican Hispanic art. That's it. And once I pulled it back in like 2 months, I like quadrupled my sales from my lowest point up to, and at that point was still my lowest point that I'm at now. So I think I tested the theory. It was that the algorithm likes for you to be consistent with your niche. Because it's going to want to show it to your niche or to the niche you're looking for. And so then I was like, well, I wonder if that'll work on social media. So I did that and I'm seeing a lot better results. And I see the people that are engaging with me on these other social media accounts are interested in what I'm putting out there. Like I'm very, very specific. Even when I'm on Instagram on these other accounts, I'm very careful what I search for because I think that, again, it'll influence the algorithm based on what I'm searching for, not just what I'm posting.
Oh, definitely.
So,
It
goes both ways. So what I found was that the feed was a lot more curated. So that's why I have all these different platforms that I'm on, because I think that if you're very careful about how you're targeting based on just your activities, I think that you could have better results. But I think that only applies to artists like me where you've got several different themes that you explore: wildlife, landscapes, westerns, you know, Japanese art, whatever, tattoos.
That's a good idea. Actually, I have a lot. I mean, I don't know if you looked at my old stuff, but I did pop surrealism for 13 years.
I saw that.
And so, you know, I relate to your work on that level too. Kind of the iconic nature of it, you know, but I don't really do, I'll do the odd surrealist piece from time to time, but I pretty much focus on abstract now, but I do have them segmented on the website, but I've never thought about doing a separate Instagram account for my pop surrealism. So that might be something to explore. Yeah. That's interesting.
Now the only caution is that it will take more time.
Right. Right.
Let's not forget that. It's enough having one social media account, let alone 3 under the same account on different platforms, but then you create another social media that then you have to figure out a way how it's all going to connect together.
Oh my God.
So it's been an interesting way for me to learn how to, you know, target certain demographics and certain people, because I have to with all these different accounts that I have.
You have to make friends with people. I'm going to let you go. You go.
it just speaks to different people. That's all. It's just the interesting thing.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and you have to make friends with the algorithm as much as you don't want to, man. I've seen those just shifts and all of a sudden you're just like non-existent. So you have to keep on top of that trends. What's going on with that? How you're documenting your work. It's very important. So it sounds like you're on top of that. I might explore that actually a little bit.
I don't feel like I am on top of it at all. That's what it feels like. I'll be honest with you. I don't feel like I am. I feel like I'm I am just trying to make things more efficient, and I'm just trying to test ideas and things that I haven't seen done before. But I don't know if I feel like I've got a good grasp on it all.
I don't know if anybody really does, right? It's constantly, it's like a moving target. It's changing, adapting. So I guess what I meant by that is it sounds like you're trying to adapt with it. You're trying to, you know, you're trying different things. But yeah, man, you almost have to have a whole team devoted to that to really be on top of it. And then they might miss the mark too. So, well, you know, that's a good segue actually. So who is Shelby Seymour, if I said her name right?
And yes,
and she's the director of operations. Now, if you don't mind talking about her a little bit, what is that all about? Okay. And how did you find her?
Shelby is my wife.
Okay. Oh, good. Hey, I got my own director of operations, my wife too.
I think that you should give her a official position for sure.
I think I should. Yeah.
But
it's unofficial right now.
We're very like-minded, but she has a very specific skill set.
Okay.
That I do not.
Like,
and she is very good at writing. She's got a master's, and she's also very organized. And so those are things, both those things I struggle with. And so I thought, you know, I would love to have you help me out with this, with certain things like copy and building a schedule and becoming more efficient and handling, you know, like she's the one that got me on Amazon, on eBay. Nice. We were on Walmart for a minute, but that became kind of a struggle. So we let that go, but she's the one that's done all that stuff for me. And, in exchange, I do the other stuff for her. So, you know, I manage her social and help her, you know, figure out the marketing side of her trying to build some of her writing career. So it's a good exchange.
Oh, very that's awesome. Exchange. Yeah. My wife is similar. You know, I wouldn't be where I'm at without her. She's from Buenos Aires, but she studied multimedia design. So when she came over here, she designed my first website. I mean, I had like a crappy website that I thought I designed. It was just basically a picture with a bunch of things floating over it. so she redid that. And then she kind of taught me, or I dabbled with Photoshop, but she basically got me, you know, she gave me a crash course and all that stuff. And then social media, she helps me with that. And she's great. Like a lot of the stuff I couldn't do without her. So you're right. I should probably give her a position. And in exchange,
we're very fortunate.
Yeah, exactly. And in exchange, I cook and clean. So there you go.
Hey, we're in the same position.
Wow. Nice. Yeah, you know, do what you can. She comes home late, so I figure at least I can do is have dinner ready for her. But that's awesome, man. Well, cool. Well, congrats for finding somebody like that. That's important too. Oh, you know, I forgot to say this. I love, by the way, just to go back to the website, I love the Kandinsky quote. I'm not sure if you're a huge fan of Kandinsky, but I've always loved Kandinsky. Yes. Reminds me of my mentor. So when I saw that, I was like, Kandinsky. Made me happy. So I wanted to ask a couple of my standard questions. I know we're kind of running a little short on time, but did you have like a superpower? Something that you do, a go-to thing, could be like a daily routine or ritual that gets you into the creative mindset? Like maybe when you're not feeling creative, there's something that you kind of have a go-to that helps you access that side.
Absolutely. My wife and I have a routine. When she comes home from work, we spend 30 minutes, no exceptions, talking about our day.
Nice.
The reason that helps me is because it helps me transition from work mode to I've now talked about what I did at work. So it's no longer happening. And that way I can kind of clear that slate and I can then shift into a creative mode with her. Nice. It's for the both of us. It's not just for me, obviously, but it's, you know, we both do that. And that is such a huge help for me to just relieve stress and anxieties and talk about issues and then feel like I'm not carrying all that baggage with me on the canvas. And
it's probably good for your relationship too, right?
And it's great for the relationship.
Yeah.
Great for the relationship.
I think one of the best gifts you can give to anybody, but especially your partner, is actively listening to them. You know what I mean? So many people are actually not listening. They're just waiting for their time to speak. And sometimes we're all busy, you know, we're all fucking crazy. So it's hard to do, but to make that a priority. I think that's great that you do that.
Yeah, I think that's where that was a huge thing we had struggled with at the beginning, and I struggled with for years, was trying to prioritize time. Mm-hmm. And not making my work or my career more important than my family or my personal time.
Yeah.
So that was such a struggle for me to have to feel, to say, you can't get on the canvas right now because, and you have this idea in your head, you're just going to have to wait because, mm-hmm. you know, your time to yourself and others is more important. So it's just trying to create those limitations. That's, I think that's what it's really about.
Yeah, that's nice. Well, and having some constraints also mm-hmm. helps creativity, I think.
Absolutely. It's like a battery.
Yeah.
That you have to recharge. You can't run the battery consistently and think it's going to perform just as good the entire time you're using it.
Right.
You have to use it, you know, and then replenish it, charge it back up by stopping, going to do something else, you know, whatever it is, because it'll run out. I've done that. I don't know if you saw one of the videos on my site was the paint-a-thon challenge where I stayed up for 24 hours straight and painted.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't see that.
I wouldn't recommend doing that, but I did it for charity.
Oh, nice.
I did it for charity. I did like 15 paintings in a day.
Oh my God. And I have my own version of that, but yeah, not specifically that yet.
And that taught me a big lesson. It taught me that I shouldn't do that because it's not only physically draining, but it's mentally draining on your mm-hmm. creative, you know, your creativity, and it's just not healthy. So I learned not to do that.
I think that's one of the biggest lessons I learned in life was that I need to replenish my battery too. Or I need to recharge it because I used to be one of those people who would just go out late at night, just keep it going, you know, keep the creativity going right when I'm drinking, all that stuff. And yeah, you just hit a wall at some point. You're actually not being your best as a creative person either, even if you think you are when you're burning the candle at both ends, you know?
You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm glad that I learned the hard way on that one. So on the flip side, biggest or a failure that you've had or experienced, if you don't mind sharing one and what you learned from it. A lot of people don't, you know, like categorize them as failures, but you get the idea.
Sure. Oh boy. What do I want to say is my biggest failure as an artist in the art career?
It can be in life. It can be anything.
It can be in life. Mm-hmm. Oh man. I was so selfish for so long. Yeah, that was my biggest one for sure. I went to therapy, you know, I really committed to trying to change because it just manifested in so many ugly ways.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that was my biggest failure, but I don't necessarily look at it as a failure. I look at it more of like a, you know, that's something I didn't know how to deal with. I didn't have the right resources. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And so, you know, now I look at it as like, well, that was a huge, you know, upgrade in my growth, but it required me to have to face that truth.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, it was just being a really selfish person. Mm-hmm. And so overcoming that really just opened up a lot more opportunities and ways of enjoying life and connecting with people. And, you know,
yeah, it's hard to be happy when you're self-absorbed, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because you also play the victim. So, yep. You know, it's like you're unhappy all the time. And right. So for me, it was just after I transitioned out of that, I felt so much more peace. And I was dedicating more time to others other than myself. So
that's awesome.
You know, so that was probably a big one for me, which I probably should be a big success, my superpower too, I guess, shouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, on the flip side, it could be. But it honestly, it's ironic because when you stop focusing on yourself as much, it kind of opens up more opportunities for you, which is, mm-hmm. you know, it's the exact opposite of what you think. It's like, no, I got to focus on myself because if I want to achieve this, but the moment you step back and go, okay, there's a bigger picture out here, so many more things come into your life.
I totally agree with that. And it applies to just running your business.
Yeah.
You know, if you're trying to help people and you're just being, you know, giving, you know, but not naive, you can really see a lot of things happen. You'd be surprised. It's really incredible.
Yeah, that's so true, man. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the Seinfeld episode where they try to see how far they can push the car? on empty. Let's do that. You want to go on this experiment with me? We're gonna get these couple of last questions out without trying to start a new one and see if we can push the tank past.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So any advice to, this is basically advice to younger artists, but I like to frame it through yourself. Like any advice to young Alejandro as an artist or as a human being coming up, what would you impart to your younger self?
I would impart to be considerate with what you're creating and why you're creating it. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if you're an actor, photographer, painter, doesn't matter. Just be considerate with those two things, because they go hand in hand, whether it's, you know, you're doing something on canvas or sculpting, and then why you're doing it. Why is it that I'm doing this thing? Is it for me? Right. Is it for somebody else? You know, what are the reasons, if there are many? So I would say that's one thing that my mentor taught me. He said, just be considerate about what you're doing.
That's great. And it's almost having respect too for what you're doing, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's awesome. You seem like a goal-oriented person. A lot of people say, well, I don't have really any goals, but where do you see your art? What would you like to achieve?
I do have a very clear goal. You're right.
Okay, good.
It's very specific. So, you know, my goal is to be able to travel, you know, at my leisure, hopefully with things that are going now, they change. But I'd like to travel at my leisure and do the two things that I love doing, which is helping artists and selling my artwork. That's it. That's what I want to do. My goal.
Well, that's a great goal. I can relate to that. And I just want to say you're already doing it. So that's great. You're kind of, I mean, I know you could probably take it further, but you're already on that path. So that's awesome, man.
Thank you so much for recognizing that. That's a great validation for me.
It's amazing. I mean, I feel the same way. It's like, it's kind of being grateful and ambitious at the same time. It's like a cycle. Mm-hmm. You just kind of keep going back and forth, right? I step back and I look back at what I've achieved. I'm like, man, if you would have told me this 10 years ago, I would have never believed this.
It would have blown my mind.
Right? But at the same time, you still are like, okay, now where can we go from here? I think that's just part of being human, right?
Yeah, you become more open and you're like, well, I'm totally flexible with what comes next.
Yes.
Because, you know, you're going to figure it out. So yeah.
That's right. I just realized that I haven't specifically talked about your art, but obviously everybody out there should check out Alejandro's work. It's awesome. The one thing I wanted to say about it, I know you do a lot of like, you know, you do Day of the Dead, you do some of like landscapes that are specific to San Angelo, you do celebrity or rock portraits, kind of iconic portraits. The one thing I'll say about your work is even when it's going from your traditional iconic portraits, I feel like even your landscapes have kind of an iconic feel to them. So that's like the one word that kept coming up in my mind was your work is very iconic, which is great.
Wow. Thank you. I've never heard that described before like that. So I'm going to write that one down.
Awesome. Use it. So everybody check out Alejandro's work. Do you want to tell people where they can find you?
Alejandro Fine Art on Google, and you'll find it on every freaking place that you could think of. I'm even on Twitch, Preston. Like,
oh, wow.
This is sad how deep this craziness goes. I'm on Twitch with my artwork.
Omnipresent.
It's like Gary Vee, man. I'm not 100% on top of like what Gary Vee says and does.
Right.
There are like a lot of things that he says that completely make sense, which is the fact that wherever the attention is, we shouldn't judge what that platform looks or feels like.
That's true.
If the people that buy your artwork are there, then you need to think about being there too. And I realize that's a lot of work, but you know, I'm not doing this because I want to just barely get by. I'm doing it because it's a business. And if I treat it like that, then, you know, I'll be able to do the things that I want to do with my life and help people around me too. So, you know, it's Alejandro Fine Art on Google, and you should find pretty much even my modeling account that was from like 11 years ago.
Nice.
You'll find that on there. So I might as well just put that out there. It's very embarrassing, but
no, it's good. It's all things you've done. I'm the same way. I've got old musician stuff. I was in a punk ska band. I've got writing stuff out there. I've got acting stuff out there. Oh yeah. You got to check.
I'm going to Google it. Yeah.
Nice. Well, First of all, I was going to say preach on, because everything you just said, I completely agree with. I do know Gary Vee. I've listened to some of his stuff. He's been on podcasts that I've listened to. I bought one of his audiobooks. If I take him too far, he gives me anxiety. But if I take little bits of wisdom here and there and apply them to myself, I completely agree with that. One of the things above all is the adaptation process. Like, I know he says he goes on every day, he wakes up and he goes on the app store and checks out what the new app is, what's kind of trending. And then he gets on there, because you're right, that's where the attention is. I would say for me, I don't take it that far, but I've definitely tried to come out of my shell and work on adapting to different platforms. And it sounds like you're doing the same.
Yeah, I truly tried. I heard when he said to get on TikTok, and I did. And it was great. But what I ended up figuring out, what he's trying to teach everybody, is to get familiar with where social media is going.
Yes.
Because if you're stuck on the Twitter side of social media, you're not going to know how to do transitions on a video when the next platform is the biggest thing since Facebook.
That's right.
And so, and if you're running a business, you definitely need to know that stuff. So that's what his real message is. It's not that you should dedicate 100% of your time to this new platform. It's just to understand it so that you can be proficient in that digital language. So that when the next thing comes out and you want to get right on it and have no problem using the platform, you'll have all that knowledge already and experience from using video and audio and, you know, and photographs, and everybody's becoming a media expert, man. And you can get left behind really quick.
Very quick.
Things are moving.
Yeah. If you get complacent for like a couple of months, even.
Dude, I let my Instagram go for a year once, and it was the biggest mistake I have ever made in my career.
Yep. I completely agree. It's funny. I don't know how many times I've kicked myself for not getting on the YouTube, jumping on the YouTube bandwagon. I had like a moment in the past where my wife and I started doing something and I just let it go, because I wasn't in the mindset. I wasn't in the correct mindset, but now I started up and it's just, you know, it's still relevant, but if you hit these things at the right time and then they take off, I mean, sky is the limit. So
I have this friend that had a studio next to my gallery. His name is Jonathan Harris. You can find him on YouTube. And a quiet Englishman about my age. And I was like, you know, he's a great artist. And I was like, I don't see a lot of people coming through your studio. He was like, oh, don't worry about it. I was like, I don't understand. He was like, I have a YouTube channel. I was like, a YouTube? You have a YouTube channel? I was like, doing what? He was like, art. I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. I was like, how many subscribers do you have? He was like, at the time he had 100,000. He's got 2 million now.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. I was like, no way. And so like a year later, he bought a house in Corpus Christi and moved, because all he was making off was, he was making like $6,000 a month on his YYouTube channel.
Well, he could be making, if he has 20 million subscribers, he could be making upwards of $20,000 a month.
No, 2 million. He has 2 million.
2 million. Oh, sorry. 2 million. Gotcha. So yeah, but, oh yeah, man. Like, and then you got all the affiliate marketing that goes with that too. It's hard to get going on there now, which is what I'm learning, but I'm growing on there. But I just wish, man, looking back I had jumped on that when it was hip. So
should have, dude. But that's the lesson, right? That's the lesson is that now that you have that point of view, you can see things happening and you're like, I see the signs. Yep. And that's what Gary Vee's trying to teach people. He's trying to teach them to see the signs to know when to strike, but you got to have some experience on using these platforms.
For sure.
To know when to do that.
Well, to piggyback on something we said earlier, I've got some ideas on YouTube. I'm assuming you're on YouTube. I know I saw some of your videos on there, but is that something you're actively working on?
I'm starting to do more of it, just because I use that. I don't know if you know about YouTube Shorts, but they just released that with the vertical platform that kind of mimics TikTok's
short
form videos. And I just put up a short video that I'd done on TikTok, and I used that hashtag, and I had like 10,000 views on this video. And I was like, this has never happened to me ever.
So I
would recommend doing it for you. And so I was like, now I need to put more time into this, because it's obviously something that's early.
Yeah.
And I need to continue to do that.
So you said it's YouTube Short. What?
Yeah. It's not a new platform. In addition to YouTube, it exists in YouTube. You could just upload your videos that are the vertical videos.
Yeah.
And just put the hashtag in the title Shorts, and then put the hashtag Shorts in the description.
Oh, nice. Okay.
and it algorithm will automatically pick it up and kick it to people and push it. 95% of the traffic from that video was from the algorithm for shorts. It shows it in the analytics.
See,
I was like, wow.
Yeah. So you learn something every day, because I've consciously made an effort to not shoot anything vertically anymore to make it more cinematic. But now I have to start doing that. Okay. Well, thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, it's because of TikTok, man. That's why.
Damn TikTok. I did join TikTok, but I was like, I don't know. I couldn't get going on it. I did release a couple dancing videos. No, I didn't. But yeah, I mean, I know there are other artists, like actually Betsy Etzenberger, who was on here, who's doing very well with her work. She's on TikTok and I think she's killing it. So yeah, it's definitely something that I should probably explore more of. It's just time is finite too, right?
Yep. That's it, man. That's the thing.
Well, let's get our wives on it then, right? They're not listening anyway.
Mine explicitly told me no. She hates social media.
Okay, fair enough.
But she does everything else. So I'm like, okay. She handles the money too. So I'm just like, I'm happy with that.
You got to be nice to her.
That stuff. Right.
Cool, man. Well, I'm hoping that our Seinfeld experiment worked and that we didn't get cut off about 10 minutes ago. So we'll see. I'll keep you posted. But thanks so much for coming, man. It was really fun talking to you.
Same here, Preston. Thanks for reaching out. Stay safe over the holidays.
And, you too.
Congratulations on all your success. I love it when you post up that you've sold something. It gets my juices going. And
awesome.
And really, really awesome to see that. So
same to you, man. Be safe. And you know what? Let's follow through on that sometime. Let's do a little collaborative effort down the road.
I'd love to, man. Even if you just want to chat, I'm totally down for that.
Sounds great. Awesome, man. Well, we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Later.
This has been the Living Artist Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. I just want you to know that I appreciate you being here, and I'm grateful to be in your ears. Your art and creative life on this planet is meaningful, so thank you for sharing it with me. If you like this podcast, whatever platform you're listening to it on, please subscribe and share it with your friends. You can also leave me a positive review to show your support. This helps me to reach more people with the algorithmic magic and keep the show going strong. If you want to see more of what I do and check out the art that I create, you can visit my website at www.pmsartwork.com or follow me on social media everywhere at PMS Artwork. That's it for now. See you back here next time.